Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
So Married to Medicine season 8 premiered.
Oh my God, I'm so excited this show is back. I feel like there are so many hardcore fans of this show who have been patiently waiting for this return. And if you guys are not watching Married to Medicine, like, this is pure Bravo goodness. Right?
Right. We're definitely going to get into it, by the way. We're absolutely recapping this week's episode. But what else?
Well, also, we have the Real Housewives of New Jersey after show premiering this week. So we have Atlanta running right now. We have Real Housewives of New Jersey. And this season of Jersey is just so incredible. I mean, obviously, it's off to such an explosive start. I actually was interviewing the ladies for the after show. So getting to hear firsthand everything that goes down this season is so, so good. And this week, obviously, we're talking to Jackie and Teresa and the whole cast about everything that's been going on between Teresa and Jackie and Evan and Gia, I guess. So you guys can check out the after show every Wednesday on BravoTV.com and, of course, Bravo's YouTube channel.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Okay, well, like you said, we're going to do Married to Medicine season 8 premiere. We're also going to talk Real Housewives of Atlanta because there is some tea being spilled on this episode, and Real Housewives of New Jersey. Plus, I interviewed Carl Radke from Summer House.
Atlanta. If I'm Cynthia at this point, I'd be looking really hard at what kind of signs the universe was trying to send me about my wedding. I mean, I will say I do look into everything. Everything I feel like is a little bit of a sign. I don't go overboard, but I certainly believe in omens and all of that. And the fact that we have this pandemic, which has ruined everyone's life, basically. So I wonder, oh my God, it's a good question. How many people have called off their wedding because they thought the pandemic was a sign they shouldn't get married? Wouldn't that be crazy?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, we need the stats on that because I know people have moved weddings. I don't know about like straight up being like, this is a sign you are not the one cancellation, but hey.
So she has the pandemic to contend with. She has this hurricane headed her way. She has groomsmen and bridesmaids dropping like flies. Her mother's dress just hasn't arrived and won't until after the wedding. Her daughter's dress doesn't arrive. And like a million other things she was listing to her sister in the car. It's just like, Cynthia. And also it makes me feel bad because everything went awry during her wedding to Peter.
Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong.
Did I tell you that Dana can't be a bridesmaid?
No.
Tracy can't make it. Marcus wasn't able to come. Mike's wedding band came today from London. It is so beautiful, but it's too small.
Oh, Lord.
Put it like this. If he get it on, I don't know if he will get it off. Oh, Noel's dressed in fit either.
You're just a bearer of good news.
Did I mention that a hurricane is on the way? My wedding may very well be gone with the wind, minus the fabulous.
Okay, if not for nothing, Cynthia is determined as hell to get married on 10-10-20. And despite all of these obstacles or signs from the universe, however you want to perceive it, she is just not going to let anything stop her. And I kind of admire that at this point.
Yeah. I just wonder if it's because she's supposed to be with Noelle's dad. I've always felt that way.
Ah.
And maybe God does too. I don't know.
Is Leon invited to the wedding? Do we know?
Is that weird? Think so.
Yeah.
No, because they are such good friends. And I think he was at the Peter wedding.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's probably right. You know, I mean, maybe that is the sign. Like, he's been at both of the weddings. Everything is falling apart. You know, maybe she's supposed to walk into the ceremony and see him in the audience and realize, you're the one for me. But I don't think that's how it goes.
Right. I mean, I think we pretty much know after that people spread, but, you know.
Okay, so let's talk about Kenya and Drew and this, like, dinner disaster from hell that happens between the two of them. So,
right.
It's really funny because in the after show, the two of them just really go in on each other about this dinner. And Kenya feels like Drew is trying to make moments for herself, almost accusing her of self-producing in some ways. And Drew throws all sorts of shade, saying that Kenya's just mad because she hasn't had an acting gig in over a decade. So, you know, they are still to this day really not seeing eye to eye on their issues.
I mean, even in present day, I don't know if that's what you mean, but like Drew in her interview a few weeks ago, I mean, she made it clear she does not like Kenya.
Right, right. Which I don't know if that'll ever be solved, because it seems like no matter what they try to do, they're not speaking the same language.
Yeah, I feel like Kenya is very divisive, and I don't think that, I think you love her or you hate her. I don't think she's an acquired taste. Like, even Marlo, I really find that whole new friendship or the reconciliation suspicious. I think Marlo just doesn't want to be on Kenya's bad side anymore.
So do you think that it's suspicious from Marlo's perspective or from Kenya's? Because I think that's the point Portia makes at the hayride later on in the episode, that she thinks Kenya has maybe ulterior motives in this reconciliation with Marlo. Like, does she need someone on her side in this whole investigation situation?
I don't know if Marlo should necessarily be careful with her friendship with Kenya, but it's like the timing of when Kenya decided to all of a sudden forgive her is very suspicious. It's very calculated.
But if you look back at that conversation, Marlo was much more interested in making it happen than Kenya.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not that I don't think Kenya could have seen the whole thing as like, oh, maybe this will be beneficial to me in the end. Okay, we can make up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it seems like at this point, Marlo does recognize that this new position she's in could cause tension between her and Portia, maybe her and Shamia, just because we know Kenya and Portia at this point are not in a good place, and Marlo is kind of falling into the middle of it.
Do you think that we're broke bitches? Because you and I have split so many checks.
Yes, I am a broke bitch for sure. I mean, it's just like, that is sort of policy, right? And I think splitting the check is one thing. It seemed like, at least in the editing and the lower thirds that we got there, that they literally paid for only their individual portions of things that they got. Like,
right.
I think Drew paid like 21, Kenya paid 30, but I am of the mindset of no matter what you ordered, what I ordered, we're here together. Let's just like split it evenly,
right?
Rather than doing the like, well, let's flip the check over and like write down everyone's card number and what each person owes. And I'm just like, okay, that is broke bitch behavior. Okay.
I don't split a check, so it's either one card or the
good.
Other. It's okay. Well, but I would like to box this up.
My friends and I, we split bills, and I can box it up as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not gonna sit here and calculate how much tax I owe on a check.
That is torture to me because, by the way, it never ends up correct.
Right, right.
It's always like you're short somehow, and then you're looking around the table and you're like, which one of you like didn't do the math correctly?
Well, and I would imagine too, for, you know, the service staff and everything, it's probably programmed in their computer to just hit like split check.
Yeah.
And there you go. Like, it's split however many ways you want. It calculates it out. It's all good. But when you're then going in and inputting, so I guess we are broke bitches, but we're not all the way broke. So that's something.
Right.
That's something.
Right. That's something.
Oh my God. Okay. Should we talk about this story leak?
Yeah. Okay. Like, what does your gut tell you?
Okay. Well, my gut tells me one thing, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to provide some receipts here. I'm going to give you some evidence.
Okay.
Or at least present a timeline. So this is the timeline of what I have figured out thanks to some other online, you know, influencers and bloggers. B. Scott dropped the exclusive on their podcast on October 1st. Okay. Page Six published this tea on October 7th.
Okay.
And then B. Scott published their blog covering the incident on October 8th. So, what does Kenya say when they're at the hayride and they're talking about Page Six has leaked it? What does Kenya say? Do you remember?
No.
She says, oh, it was Page Six. If it were TMZ or B. Scott, then maybe it would be me. And that's sort of it. So then it's like, okay, well, then Page Six, who could it have been? Right now, it seems like all fingers are still pointing to Kenya, because who else would have motive to leak it to the press? But that timeline of B. Scott having that information October 1st, but the Page Six article coming out a few days later says a lot in some ways.
You know, I always just sort of assume it's someone who's either a producer working behind the scenes, doing makeup or hair. Mm-hmm. Like, I just assume it's one of those people. Like,
yeah.
Because they are privy to so much information. And I don't know, doesn't it sort of peak? I mean, who was not so excited for the super tease to drop because we knew that this was coming?
Right.
So it's not like, I remember when the Puppygate thing came out, which I know this brings up PTSD.
I know, I just like a lot of Beverly Hills fans.
But it also made sense to me that it could have been someone in the behind the scenes camp. But I'm like, but you're not. Like, generally,
yeah,
it just sort of piques interest more.
Right. It generates buzz. There's that old saying of like, no press is bad press, right? No matter what, you are bringing attention to something that you want people to tune into or whatever it may be. I will say, I listened to the October 1st episode of B. Scott's podcast, and they said, I have connections with the network. I have connections with production. And I also have connections with the cast, including Kenya. So it really, you know, it could be a number of things. And also, you know, thinking back to Real Housewives of Potomac and what Monique said about the winery incident, everyone was saying it looked like Monique had leaked all of the information about what happened at the winery to the press.
Right.
And Monique was like, look, I told what, like a story, the story about what happened to a group of family and friends at a gathering that I had. Someone in that group, and now she knew who it was, like months and months later, was the one who brought it to the press. So to your point, it could have been a makeup artist, it could have been a hairstylist, it could have been anybody, really. So, you know, I don't know if Kenya would incriminate herself by saying B. Scott anyway. Like, I don't think she's that stupid. So maybe not Kenya, but I don't know. It's out there now. So, I mean, the lady's got to deal with it.
Also, because they didn't say it, the girls, but did it mention Tania and Portia by name?
I don't think Page Six did. I believe B. Scott's, the day after, did mention Tania and Portia by name.
Because isn't it possible then? Even Tania leaked it because maybe she's vying for that peach. And she knows that if her name's out there, you know, chances are good.
Well, let's talk about Tania, because if she did do that, why flee the country to Canada?
It's probably just like her mom's birthday or something.
Right. Well, she did. Yeah, she is from Canada. She did travel home to probably see family, but the timing of it all is quite suspicious. It's everyone's back from this trip. All of a sudden it leaks to Page Six. So did she just pick up the phone, leak some information to Page Six, and then she was like, I'm out of here. No one will think it's me if I'm not around. I don't know. That's an interesting way to think about it.
We're asking all the right questions, I think.
But will we ever get the answers? That's the thing, is these things happen, like even with Lisa Vanderpump and everything. Like, will we ever really know who leaked it? Probably not.
Right.
But maybe.
But maybe.
But maybe.
I will say, I felt so bad for Portia driving an hour in the wrong direction. This happened to me all the time in Texas when I drove.
Oh,
I
God.
Am terrible with directions. Even with a GPS, I would get lost all the time.
Well, back in the days when you were actually in Texas, which was like college, I mean, we had to print things out on MapQuest. You know what I mean?
Oh, so my like, God,
you
yes.
Had, if you just had those directions and you followed them, there was nothing telling you, like, turn around, you know? Like
even when I moved to New York almost 10 years ago, I remember Aaron printed out directions for me to get to work. It was like, take this subway.
Oh,
like,
my
so
God.
I would just look at this piece of paper. Like, I would just study it each stop.
Nerd.
Yeah.
Well, the episode ends with Kenya speaking to her therapist and really going over all of this trauma that she's been through in the past and how it shows up in her present. And I think this is the story we keep getting with Kenya every single season. And it's what always draws me back into her is when she starts to recognize this trauma and how it affects her. So in a lot of ways, it explains her behavior towards other people, but it doesn't justify it, right? And mm-hmm. And that's what I struggle with. And I know a lot of fans, like you said earlier, love or hate. And I just like I love to hate her, but I hate that I love her at the same time. It's very complex.
Right. Right. I get it. You also should go to therapy for this issue.
I think I should bring this up to a therapist. Yeah. Just like, I need to work through my trauma with Kenya.
I mean, I feel like I was not aware of her relationship with a 26-year-old when she was 15.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's new. I think that's new information. Yeah. It's tough. I think she has a pattern of almost excusing being mistreated because she is just seeking love and affection and recognition, acknowledgement. It's so layered and so complicated, and it makes sense why she might continue to try to work through this relationship with Mark. But at the end of the day, you know, she just, I think she should just focus on being the best mom she can be to Brooklyn. And it seems like that is her number one priority at the moment. So I just hope she can put all of her effort into that and find a way to just peacefully co-parent with Mark, because it doesn't seem like the two of them are on the path to reconciliation.
Right.
So I spoke with Summer House's Carl Radke about how he and his family are coping with the loss of his brother and what it was like to come back to all the drama in the Hamptons. Here's that interview. All right, guys, we are here with Carl Radke from Summer House. Carl, welcome back to The Daily Dish.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Of course, you are welcome anytime. Well, you know, first of all, Carl, watching this season, I can only imagine how difficult it must be to revisit what you and your family went through last summer. So I really want to start just by giving you the floor to talk about your experience with our listeners.
You know, I think it's been, you know, obviously it's been a crazy year for a lot of people, for pretty much everybody in the world. And you know, obviously my, you know, Summer House has been a big part of my life the last five years. And, you know, I think it's interesting. You know, obviously our show is a lot about a lot of fun and romance and drama and partying. And, you know, this season was a lot more real just because of, you know, what's going on in the world and really people having to deal with really difficult things. It's been the hardest year of my entire life.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But in some ways it's been very, very revealing and put a lot of perspective for me. So it's, you know, I've learned a lot and I've grown a lot in the last year. I mean, when you see yourself on TV for four seasons, you know, getting into all sorts of nonsense, it's very sobering. So, you know, for me personally, I've been, you know, really trying to better myself, but, you know, obviously dealing with a family tragedy like we did. I'm pretty sure in the history of Bravo, there's no one's ever been mic'd up while filming a show and then find out his brother passed away. So it's very hard to talk about. It's still very raw, but, you know, I'm very grateful that I have a platform to share a little bit about it. Hopefully it can help some people. It doesn't take away the pain, but I think as I continue to work through it, you know, hopefully people can hear this message and benefit from it. I don't know any other reason to, or any other way to think about it, because it really sucks. It's shitty. You know, our family's luckily come together in a you know, beautiful way, but dealing with it in a public platform like this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, no, I can only imagine. And, you know, I'm very curious to know what the fan outreach has been like through this whole experience. Cause like you said, you've been on Bravo for 5 years, you know, people really care about you. They care about this show. So what has it been like? What have fans been saying when they reach out to you?
Well, it's been kind of unique in the fact that, like, in August, when my brother passed, I, you know, I have a lot of friends and family, and, you know, not a lot of people really knew my brother. Even my friends on the show, I never met my brother. Obviously I'd heard about him and, you know, I talked about him in spurts here and there, but it's interesting. A lot of people have shown support for me, but it's a weird feeling when people are supporting you and they don't know you. I've had an interesting ride with Summer House over the years. I mean, I have messages from people saying you're an asshole. And then the next message is, I'm so sorry about your brother. I've taken definitely a lot of criticism over the seasons. So I will say, not that I wanted it this way, but it's nice to get people saying nice things. I've generally taken a beating on this show, and probably the villain and the bad person and the evil person, whether I am or not in real life, but it's just the way that things have shaken out. So the support has been overwhelming. Truthfully, it's really hard to read. A lot of stories are very relatable. You know, people have lost a sibling to addiction, or someone struggling with mental health, or you name it. By no means am I a therapist. So it's interesting how many people are reaching out to me asking for help or what they can do. And I'm not necessarily equipped to do that, because I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I'm going through my own stuff. So to answer your question, it's amazing, but it's a lot. Like, I don't know what to do with it.
Right.
It's amazing to have people that have never met you and seen you on TV, you know, show support. it's a lot. It's amazing to get that love and support, but I'm still going through it, you know, so it's hard to really explain.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, grief is a tricky thing like that, right? It comes in waves and it hits at different points in your life. So I can only imagine that this outreach, it must be very overwhelming. And I'm sure you appreciate a lot of the messages, but sometimes you're like, how do I respond to this? Like, what do I say? I'm not equipped to you know, deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hardest part is I'm by no means, I don't want anybody to look up to me or see my life as something they want to achieve. You know, I'm very flawed. I have a lot of issues. You know, my challenges have been front and center on the show and probably more so than others. So it's just, I've been very vulnerable, put a lot out there, and it's very hard. You know, I when I signed up for Bravo 5 years ago, I never thought I'd have to deal with half of the things I deal with publicly. And this is just another notch on the belt of just really challenging things. But again, you know, I think when you tell your truth and you're honest on the show, I mean, obviously people support that. So this is the most honest and real I've ever been. And obviously, it's great to have fan support, but you know, is that the end all be all? No, you know, because like I said, I mean, years past, I mean, I've gotten death threats. People have told me they'd fight me. I've had people publicly yet to call me an asshole. So it's just interesting how people quickly turn when you deal with something like I'm dealing with. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question or not.
No, it definitely does. And to be fair, I think we are seeing Carl 5.0 this season, right? So there is a new man. I mean, I've gotten so many people saying to me like, Carl is glowing this season. So I wouldn't say that you are the villain. And I don't think you've been the villain, you know, at all this season. So I will give you that much credit.
Well, thanks.
Well, I also want to know what it was like to come back to the house when you returned and being surrounded by your friends again, even though at first you were in quarantine. What was it like to come back and be surrounded by your housemates again?
I mean, obviously it's bittersweet in a weird way. I mean, it's great to see them. I have amazing friends. I've often joked, I don't know what else I would do in the summer if I wasn't out in the Hamptons with them, but you know, it's very conflicting. I mean, I've wanted to be with my family, but also with COVID and just being safe. There's a lot of risks involved with, you know, with leaving the house and traveling to visit my parents and see, you know, family. Luckily, I was able to do that safely. But honestly, when you're surrounded by grief and going, you know, I'm in my childhood home that my brother no longer is there, and just really emotional. And I for me, I kind of wanted to go back to the house to be with my friends, to kind of get away from some of the pain and thinking that, you know, I think my brother would have wanted me to have a fun summer, regardless of, you know, what happened with him. So it was a really difficult decision, but I felt like in a weird way, I don't know, I'm such a big part of the group, or at least I feel like I am, that it would be just worth trying to go back to the house and spending, you know, finishing the rest of the summer with them. As hard as it was, I don't regret the decision, but definitely was, you know, difficult being in the house with people bitching about trash and I'm, you know, grieving over the loss of my brother. So it's just, interesting environment to be in.
Of course. Yeah. Well, I will say, I think Paige said it earlier this season that Kyle thinks he's like the backbone of the house, but really it's you. And I think we saw that when you were gone, that, I don't know, there was something missing. I feel like everyone was kind of like, I miss Carl. Like, I want Carl back. So I think you really do bring something very special to the house. And it is noticeable when you're not there.
Yeah, I guess there's not a lot of drama going on when I'm up there. not someone doing crazy shit or getting themselves into trouble. So that's been my MO for the years. So it's kind of nice when obviously it's nice to be missed, but I think I don't know. It was just I really don't know. I don't know.
It all feels a little bit more trivial perhaps when you get back and you're like, why are we fighting over the garbage?
Yeah, no, that's been something I've struggled with, you know, from the beginning is, you know, I think sometimes our lack of gratitude and grace towards the opportunities that we have and how lucky we are to be in the positions we are. Yeah, a lot of hard work. You know, I think it's interesting how people complain and bitch and moan about living in a $5 million house on the weekends.
Right. Or for 6 weeks straight.
Exactly. So it's, you know, I've always tried to look at it from a different angle. And, you know, I come from Pittsburgh. I very, you know, lower middle class family, obviously well educated, but I, you know, I'm not supposed to be on Bravo. I'm not supposed to be in New York City doing what I do. I'm incredibly lucky, you know, I'm very grateful for where I am. So I try to put it through that lens on the weekends and just be like, hey, we're just lucky to be here. You know, let's not bitch and moan so much. But I know it's a TV show and I know you guys wouldn't watch if there wasn't arguing or drama.
Well, when you do get back, you are in quarantine, but there's this really funny scene where you hear something is going on outside and it's Kyle and Hannah having a conversation and you're like, well, I might be in quarantine, but at least I got like a front row seat to this show that's going on. So at the time, what was your take on what was going on between the two of them? Obviously, we know how close you are to Kyle, but there was all of this drama that was actually much bigger than just the trash, right? It came down to Hannah kind of coming for Kyle and Amanda's relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, Kyle's very type A, Hannah's very type A. They're both very competitive. You know, I think there's, unfortunately, you know, when you're best friends or when you hang out with a group of friends as much as we do, obviously there's other things that probably can't be really explained on camera of why people are pissed off. Honestly, it's a function of like, it's a function of just competitiveness. It's like, you know, who gets more attention, whose company's doing cooler. I mean, it's all stupid shit that unfortunately comes to surface in a dumb way.
Right.
I think a lot of Kyle and Hannah's arguments are literally like what we call breaking the fourth wall. I mean, Kyle was mad about certain things that Hannah had done. Hannah's mad that Kyle, you know, maybe lover boy gets so much shine and, you know, like all this other stuff. I mean, it's just stupid shit, honestly. I think Hannah is dealing with a lot personally. I think Kyle's, you know, got a lot of stresses with work. And anytime you go after his relationship, like Hannah has, that's going to cause a fight. So I think that's what triggered it. But clearly there's a lot of other underlying things. You know, I would say one of those is just Hannah's treatment of Amanda and their friendship. So I think Kyle had to step in and kind of air his side of things because he knows how Amanda's been affected by some of, you know, Hannah's throwing under the bus. I don't know. It's, I honestly don't really care. I got bigger problems than those two fighting. So yeah.
Right. Well, how are things going with Loverboy? Because we do see you and Kyle and Amanda all summer long working really hard, you know, to get things going. And obviously with the pandemic, there were a lot of hiccups along the way.
Yeah. I mean, with any startup, you know, there's challenges. And as with any company during the last year, there's challenges with supply chain difficulties, you know, actually being in warehouses, getting product, you name it. There's been all sorts of challenges for everyone. But in the alcohol industry, you know, we ran into, you know, some challenges that other brands and other companies went into, but being a smaller company certainly amplifies that. But obviously, you know, startups, there's up and downs, but the business is going incredibly well. That's honestly what my helpful distraction is in my life right now, is just focusing on work. We're building something incredibly unique and special. Before I got on the phone with you, I mean, I was on the phone with the state of New Hampshire getting our new flavor delivered up there, which is orange chai. So, I mean, I'm on the phone all day working it. You know, Kyle and Amanda are amazing. We do have another, you know, other team members that help us push this along, but it's been an incredible experience. I've never worked harder or longer hours in my entire life. I hope it pays off. I think it will.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like even just the success you guys have had on the merch front, I feel like things really picked up with that. So at least there's some momentum on that side of things.
Yeah. I mean, the merch is, it's kind of the easiest way to be involved with the brand. You know, it's an easier barrier to entry. You know, we have some under 21 fans, which certainly can take part in the merchandise. And then also our product isn't available everywhere. So, you know, in all the states that we don't have our teas or our spritz, the merchandise is a nice little way for people to get involved. And I will say Amanda's done an unbelievable job with the creative and the design of the merch. It's almost its own other entity besides the tea. You know, she's done an amazing job. So yeah, the merch has been a huge part of our business. And I hope that will continue to grow.
Do you have a favorite flavor of Loverboy?
Well, I haven't been drinking.
That's true.
So, you know, when I was drinking, lemon iced tea was my favorite. Yeah, I mean, I liked them all, but lemon iced tea was my favorite.
That sounds good. I mean, it's classic, right? You can't go wrong with the lemon iced tea.
Yeah, I mean, our season one and season two, if anybody were to pay close attention, you would see Kyle and I and others drinking massive amounts of Twisted Tea. Now, Twisted Tea has a ton of sugar. It's terrible for you. And truthfully, that's how Loverboy, the kind of the impetus of it started, was, you know, us not wanting sugary drinks, us wanting less hangovers, and us looking for a cool brand that, I don't know, had a little more personality and color to it. So instead of going to the store and buying the next thing out, it was like, why don't we create our own? So hats off to Kyle for seeing the light. Yeah, I mean, the lemon iced tea is definitely kind of your, just your good old fashioned tea with no sugar and a good time.
Well, I do want to ask you too about, there are some new significant others popping up at this point in the season on the show. So Danielle has Robert. What do you know about Robert? What can you tell us about him? He seems really cute, really nice. He's a chef. What else do we need to know about him?
I mean, Robert's, yeah, I mean, you kind of nailed it. You know, I don't know as far as just like, you know, I didn't know him personally. Obviously, you know, I've known Danielle the longest out of anybody in the house. And obviously Danielle and I have a little bit of a history as well, but you know, Danielle and I have remained very close friends. I was excited for her to meet someone. And, you know, I think anytime you hear chef, you're like, oh, cool. Hope he's a good cook.
Right.
But yeah, he fit in really well with the group. I mean, he's our age, or at least the guy's age roughly. So that obviously helped. And, you know, he's actually from Ohio. So he's a Midwest guy. And I have some friends from Cincinnati actually that he knows. So, you know, we welcome any newbie with open arms, but he's definitely a cool dude. And I know he makes Danielle really happy. So that's all we can ask for.
Yeah, that's true. What about Dez and Hannah?
Yeah, I mean, same deal. I mean, I didn't know anything about Dez. All I heard was he was a comedian, you know, really nice guy. I mean, I didn't get to know him as well. Just, I think him and Hannah were a little more focused on, you know, just the two of them, which is totally fine especially after what Hannah had been through. And I think she needed some just personal time with him. But yeah, he's a nice guy. I mean, I didn't really get a ton of time with him. I don't have it out for any of the new guys in the house. I'm always trying to make them feel warm and welcome. And, you know, I didn't spend a ton of time with him, but he seems like a good dude.
Does he kind of give you like a little bit older Kyle vibes? Because that's what I get at least when I first saw him.
I don't get that one at all. I can see how it would look, but if you ever talk to him in person and talk to Kyle in person, I don't think you'd feel the same way. Two very different energies, in my opinion.
Got it.
Two very different personalities. So looks, maybe, but everything else, no, nothing close.
Everything else, not a chance. Well, I mean, I have to ask, what about you? Is there anyone in your life at the moment that we should know about?
There is not.
Okay. You hear that, everybody? Single. Carl's single.
Well, we started the interview off with that my brother died in August.
Right.
So I think it would be doing myself a disservice and anybody else that I'm trying to date to get involved with someone when I'm still, you know, trying to figure out, you know, where I am with my life and how I'm navigating, you know, the loss of my brother and just my business. I'm not ready to date anybody right now. So
yeah, it's not a priority. I get that.
Nope.
Well, at this point in the season two, Lindsay and Stravi appear to be completely over. Do you think that her expectations for their relationship were just too high?
I mean, I think Lindsay can at times, you know, be a challenge, you know, in her relationships. I think, you know, Stravi and her dated not long after I was, you know, I guess dating Lindsay, as you want to call it. It was like a week and a half after I basically told her I just wanted to be friends, that they were boyfriend, girlfriend. You know, I think from the beginning, I think she set proper expectations of what she was looking for. And I think Steven was meeting those at the beginning. And as with a lot of relationships, that courting and, you know, excitement level on the beginning is always high. And, you know, I think, like I said, Lindsay has very high expectation of what she wants. I feel like she was pretty open and honest about that. And, you know, Steven didn't seem like he was able to kind of meet those demands. And, you know, more power to Lindsay for establishing what she wants. You know, I don't know. I think she can be tough, but I feel like with her, if she says it to your face and explains what she wants, and if you tell her you're going to do that and don't do it, then, you know, it's going to make for a difficult relationship.
Totally.
I do like Steven. I love Lindsay. I want them to be happy. It's just, I think, you know, Lindsay's ready to get married. She's ready to have babies. And I don't know if Stravi's ready for that.
Right, right. And she did seem to make that pretty clear from the get-go. She had the list going. She was like, I am on a timeline. And I feel like you got to know what you signed up for when you get involved with Lindsay.
Yep.
You're like,
Yeah, no, I love Lindsay. You know, I think she deserves happiness. You know, my thing is just, I think it's very hard to date while being in the house. So, you know, Steven definitely got put into a tougher situation, but I did think going into the summer, it was kind of a make or break for them. So I guess you'll have to see how it all plays out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go back to, you know, some of the lifestyle changes that you've made. You know, a lot of people are saying Carl is glowing this season. You mentioned that you're not drinking alcohol. What are some other things that you've done in terms of, you know, exercise or anything, diet changes? What are some things that you've done to really kind of revamp your lifestyle?
Yeah, I mean, I think really therapy is number one. You know, I recommend any of our cast members or our friends on the show to go to therapy. I think most of them do actually, which is great. But therapy, number one, meditation's number two. So those are two key things that I was not doing up until about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've done some therapy, but truthfully was just not as fully honest in those sessions as I should have been, you know, about my own challenges and my own substances. So, you know, I've really taken a good look at myself about my relationship with alcohol. You know, this past summer, I went in basically, so, you know, I've gotten a lot of shit about this and it's still something that bothers me. So I'll just kind of say it. A lot of people have, you know, given me shit about saying I'm sober. Basically from last March until June, I was sober. And then I decided to start drinking a little bit. felt like I could moderate this summer. I did. I felt like I did a good job at that. But, you know, I think after my brother passing, I just kind of lost my way a little bit this fall and was drinking some more. Mm-hmm. Decided in January to, you know, start getting back on sober. So I've been sober 55 days. And, you know, for me right now, with all the things going on in the world, with my brother's stuff still lingering, it just, you know, addiction runs in my family. And I needed to take a serious look at myself with how that affects me. So, yeah, I mean, I've been sober, but that definitely helps. but it's not everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, working out, I drink a ton of water. People go, "You're glowing." I go, "It's just because I'm drinking a lot of water."
Right, right. It's the simple thing sometimes, right? Like, just stay hydrated.
Yeah, and then the last thing I would say is acupuncture has been helpful. Working out, you know, I definitely try to, you know, take some time for myself each day to do something active, whether it's running, bike riding, yoga, you name it. But those are kind of all the things that I've done. I haven't had any surgeries. People have asked if I had my ears pinned back or my teeth done. I've
had really?
Literally nothing done to my body at all, other than I've gained some weight. I don't drink right now, at least. I was a little bit this summer, but I don't know. It's just funny how people like think immediately like something, like I did some drastic thing. It's been very small wins.
Right, right. Well, you are on Bravo, and oftentimes housewives come back to new seasons with, you know, a nip or a tuck here. So I guess it's like understandable, but I feel like, you know, I don't think we've seen that drastic of a change in you from season to season.
I mean, I think the only changes I've made is I've bought a little looser fitting clothes. I bought a little bit bigger jeans. You know, I've gotten a lot of shit over the years about my clothes and my fashion. So I've made some adjustments there. So hopefully it gets people off my back.
I don't think there's anything wrong with your fashion. I feel like you're dressing very well this season. I think you're looking pretty good. Well,
thank you.
You're welcome. We also have seen in, you know, the mid-season tease, there is this huge blowout that goes down in the house. It seems to be between you and Kyle and Luke. So what can you tease us about that?
I mean, I think the way I'll tease it is this is, you know, we're in a house where nothing, you know, you can't sneak anything by anybody. You know, being open and honest is just the best way of action. I think Luke coming into the summer, you know, having some baggage a little bit, so to speak. You know, I think our, you know, me and Kyle, we want Luke to have a good summer. We wanted him to get through some of the nonsense with the girls, and not that I'm dismissing the girls' feelings or anything. It was, you know, for me and Kyle, we've spent four summers of having to own things, be responsible for our actions, take accountability for how we've made people feel, accepting and acknowledging people's feelings. And some of those things, you know, I think we didn't see Luke doing. And, you know, you add in tension, you add in other elements of just being in a house together, and it boils over. So you'll have to see, you know, kind of how it all builds up. But, you know, we never want to get into it with our friends, but you know, you add in a lot of stress and a lot of just previous history of, you know, me and Kyle kind of taking it on the chin and Luke kind of trying to avoid it. So we were, you know, a little frustrated, but unfortunately it built up. So you'll have to see how I haven't seen how it plays out either. I mean, I was there, but
right.
You know, I don't know how it's going to look.
Yeah, no, well, I think your explanation makes a lot of sense, you know, especially knowing that coming into the house, there is this kind of tension between Luke and Hannah, and Sierra is also involved. So that makes a lot of sense, the way you put it into perspective about what you and Kyle have been through in the house over the last couple of years. It's, you know, maybe the standards felt like they were a little bit different for Luke.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I like to equate as, you know, Kyle and I've, you know, being men on this show and being men on Bravo is certainly very, very eye-opening for a lot of us. I mean, obviously, it's a female-driven network. We understand that. And I think sometimes Kyle and I've, you know, just felt like, just because we're the guy, you know, you got to take a beating. And I think, you know, we're trying to kind of help Luke and help guide him to what has worked for us and how we've navigated difficult situations. This is not an easy one for Luke. And we were really, I think, trying to help him. And I think sometimes you can't get through to some people just based on their own messiness in their heads. So, you know, I think Kyle and I really, we like Luke. We want to help Luke. And unfortunately, sometimes how you go about helping sometimes boils over.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, when it's a house, everybody's living together. I'm sure people are, you know, some people are drinking a little bit. Things can boil over. We get it.
Yep. And listen, me and Luke last season, was it? Yeah. We got into it.
Yeah.
Got into it at the batting cage. Now I was incredibly, I was just under the influence big time of alcohol and just had a really, you know, I've gotten into it with my guy friends before. So I guess, you know, when people are like, oh, you got into it with him, I'm like, I've gotten into fights with my guy friend before. It's, you know, usually we kiss and make up the next day and we're all good, but.
Got it. There are also hints in the mid-season tease of something maybe between you and Sierra. So can we expect a hookup between the two of you?
No, you cannot.
Oh, damn. Okay, fine.
Sierra's amazing. I'll just put it like this. I mean, Sierra dated Luke. I don't step on other people's lawns, that you know what I mean? So Luke and Sierra had their thing. I think Sierra is amazing. She's cool, but yeah, I'm not trying to, I've already got enough problems in my life. So she's a sweetheart. It was great to get to know her, but I never thought there was anything other than that. And again, because my loyalty to Luke.
Yeah. That makes sense. I was kind of hoping for it because I, you know, do like you, I like Sierra. I was like, that could be a fun little summer fling, but you know, maybe one day in the future.
Yeah, no, I said it would have to be another person. Yeah. You know, Luke and Sierra, that's their thing. I've already had enough of inner house relationship nonsense that it's
true.
Yeah, it's just it's not worth it to me, and I, you know, I've got a lot of other problems that I'm worried about.
Right. Well, of course, Carl, I cannot let you go without asking about how your lovely mother Sharon is doing, because I know she is also such a fan favorite. You know, given everything that your family has been through, we did see at the beginning of the season that she got married and had this really wonderful celebration. You guys got to tune in virtually. So how is Sharon doing?
She's doing really well, all things considered. Thank you for asking. Yeah, she got married this past summer, which was a beautiful thing. Obviously, a week later it was a tragedy. So it's been a little interesting just from a family perspective. I think the silver lining is our family came together in a beautiful way. You know, my mom and dad, you know, were there together just, you know, after my mom's wedding with the funeral. So it's a new chapter for my mom. It's a new chapter for my dad. It's a new chapter for me. We're all kind of hanging on the best we can. But my mom just got a new dog actually this past week, which she's excited about. So yeah, I mean, it's never easy, but you know, my mom, she's a warrior. So she keeps paddling on.
Yeah. Well, Carl, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. And I, you know, can speak on behalf of everyone at Bravo and all of the fans that we're sending you guys so much love, you, your mom, your whole family, for everything that you guys have been through. And, you know, this season of Summer House, really outside of what you've gone through, it has been so great. So we're just really excited to see the rest of the season play out.
Yeah, I am too, actually.
Awesome. Well, Carl, thank you again for coming to talk with us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Sarah.
All right, we'll talk with you soon.
2021 is looking up, which means there should be plenty of new opportunities for you to grow your business. Whether you're shifting business hours or hiring more remote employees, one thing that remains unchanged is the importance of having the right people on your team. When you're ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. And to lend a helping hand, your first job post is free. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 30 million members in the UK. And now you can do this all from your mobile device, no matter where the day takes you. That's how LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. And now you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/reach. Again, that's linkedin.com/reach to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Jersey?
Yes. We're still at the lake house, and I wanted to ask you about this phone call between Margaret and her husband, Joe. Like, very simple, just, hey, how's it go? Checking in phone call. But Joe is like, you know, I'm hungover. I was at boys' night last night. And she was like, well, was Evan there? No. Did the Evan stuff come up? No. But that was a lie. Why did he lie?
So Evan obviously didn't go.
Evan did not go.
You guys didn't talk about the whole situation.
No.
Tell me what the rumor is.
That he's got a girlfriend.
And to be quite honest with you,
I have sort of heard the same rumors.
Well, I think gut instinct for Joe Benigno is to protect bro code at all costs, right? Like, what happens at guys' night stays at guys' night.
Right.
However, Joe Benigno, it was filmed. So that's going to come out at some point, which it most certainly does later on this season. So, you know, I get wanting to be like, oh, no, it didn't come up. We didn't talk about it, because then Margaret was going to be like, well, what'd you say? What did everybody else think? She was then going to probably try to pull information out of Joe, and he didn't want to end up throwing anybody under the bus, especially knowing what he had said at Guy's Night, which was almost being like, well, yeah, I kind of heard the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like that was going to be a very risky path to go down if he had confirmed to Margaret they did talk about Evan. But she has to know they must have.
I mean, are you the same way? Do you protect bro code at all costs after a guy's night?
Well, when I go out with my guy friends, which honest to God, I would love to have a guy's night with this group of men, mostly just Frank Catania. I would just like to have
some apple fruit martinis.
Some apple martinis with Frank Catania. Like, I would just absolutely love that. But, you know, I sort of get it. You know, these guys, they are very much a part of this show, and they are very active compared to a lot of other house husbands. So, you know, I understand why these issues that the women are going through are going to come up, and they might want to protect each other. But, you know, I feel like, generally speaking, you got to respect bro code at the end of the day. I have a question for you. Do you suspect that Michelle knew exactly what she was doing, bringing that bone to Jen about Joe Gorga allegedly owing her husband money?
Oh, yeah. Like, I think that she went, got her makeup done, her hair done, waited till the camera was pointed at her. Like, probably told a producer, you're going to want to mic me for this. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
She seems like the type, because not only does she possibly have a vendetta against the Gorgas if she feels like her husband is owed money, but also because she has a real estate business that she wants to promote, I would think.
Well, yeah, and she's got Teresa as her client, so it's almost a conflict of interest, isn't it? Like, going after Teresa's brother, but then still expecting that, you know, Teresa's going to list her house with her? I don't know. Wasn't the best move.
I just had a lot of thoughts about this. Okay, first of all, there is something about Real Housewives of Jersey and owing money. I was recently preparing for Life After Bravo stuff, and so I was going back to the beginning seasons of Jersey, and it was like people accusing Joe Giudice of owing them money at parties. Like, people that weren't on the show, but it was like the same exact thing where they were at a party and someone who was not on the cast being like, well, you know, Joe Giudice owes me money. He owes me like $1,000. What is it with Jersey and owing money?
I don't know. Well, $1,000 is also like, okay, that sucks. But if Joe Gorga's owing tens of thousands, that's crazy.
I just feel like, and I mean, we see how he explains it to Melissa. I don't think he's stupid enough to owe someone that much money.
Right.
Like, it probably is just like he said. There was never a formal agreement in place, so therefore he didn't, like, I mean, you know, why would you just hand someone that much money if you didn't have an agreement?
Right. Yeah. Maybe it was one of those, like, there was no contract in place. He doesn't actually legally owe money, but it was well, if we end up making X amount on this, like, I'll give you a cut or something. And it was just sort of in passing more than anything, like a handshake deal, as they say.
Right.
Because I can see that happening a lot in Joe Gorga's life. That's just something I see for him.
Right.
In his everyday life.
My other thought was just how Teresa, just the double standard continues, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she wants Melissa and her brother to stand up for her all the time. Anything that comes up, she wants them on her side. With this Jackie thing, if you're not on her side, you're against her. But Teresa doesn't stand up for her brother when it comes to the, like, what she should have said to this real estate agent is like, I heard you've been saying this stuff, like, on camera about my brother. If you do it again, like, you're not going to get my business.
Right. Right. It's interesting because even when we see the conversation with Jackie and Margaret, and Jackie brings up the hair pull, and she's like, Margaret, have you forgiven her? Have you forgiven Danielle? Like, how can you be so gullible? And it raises the question of how many passes does Teresa get with this group? It's like the limit does not exist, you know, like, she, no matter what happens, people forgive and move on with Teresa, even though if she's not the one doing it back to them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that ties into what you're saying, in that she isn't really loyal to anyone but herself, but people allow that and they've enabled that behavior. season over season. And I think a lot of fans and even maybe Jackie on the show, they're starting to recognize like this behavior isn't healthy. This needs to stop because it's affecting everybody.
Right.
And it's affecting families now, you know, it's rough. Also with the dinner that we see them at Lake George, and Margaret starts talking about this book she's writing and how she, you know, felt pressured at one point in her early career to have sex with her boss. It seems like the way Margaret is positioning it is that it wasn't any kind of assault or anything like that, but it was the culture at the time, right? This toxic work culture back in the 80s and, you know, men in power and all of that, which is something that, you know, everyone is very aware of at this point. And when we see Jen's face at the dinner table and then we cut to her in interview, there's just something about Jen's approach that she needs to be very careful how she navigates this situation with Margaret, because she can very easily go against women and say something that is extremely problematic. And that's not out of the realm of possibility with someone like Jen. You know, so I just hope she is a little bit more careful about how she discusses what Margaret has been through.
I don't want to diminish what she's gone through.
It was a weird dynamic and it was a very different time.
But I would never say that out loud, let alone publish it in a book. I mean, there are some things that you just take to the grave.
Absolutely. It also, to me, a little bit shows that Jen is sort of out of touch with working, period. Because although things are better, like this situation that Margaret is describing, that could still very easily happen. It's all about power dynamics. And like, you know, even though there are much more regulate, like things in place to help women navigate it, if you have a boss making a move on you, there is part of you that's going to be afraid you'll lose your job. Like, depending on how you handle the situation.
Right, right. And that's the problem. Like you said, it's a power dynamic.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, from what Margaret is saying, there was consent. She consented to the action. So that's not really the issue, but it is something that women and even men face in the workforce and have for a really long time. So it's not even something to be ashamed of. And that's sort of what Jen seems to be inferring when she's like, well, I wouldn't bring that up, or I wouldn't write that in a book. I wouldn't tell people about that. But that's the whole point. When you're trying to raise awareness to an issue and you're trying to reflect on past experiences and share them with people so they can avoid getting into the same situation as you, like that is constructive and helpful in turning a negative into a positive. So yeah, it seems like maybe Jen just isn't putting that together at the moment, maybe because she hasn't had similar experiences to Margaret, but that doesn't, you can't, you know, like she says, I'm not trying to diminish what Margaret has been through, but you kind of are.
Right, exactly.
You know, what's really interesting too is this whole Lake George trip with that, without Jackie being there, trying to imagine what was going on at Jackie's house at the time. And we see her, you know, brother come over and they have a conversation. And last episode, I think we saw Jackie cutting her kid's hair and all of that. But it's really interesting because we get into it a little bit in the after show about how upset Jackie was and how much she and Evan were fighting during this time. And it wasn't that they were mad at each other or whatever, but it was the whole situation. They had never had this level of stress in their lives. And Jackie really needed to take a break from filming. And she was like, I have to be there for my family right now. I can't put this girl's trip first. I need to be with my family. So I do wish we got to see a little bit more of that, but I understand why Jackie was like, I don't want a crew in my house for this. We're going through it. We're working through it. Let us have our privacy for now. But damn, do I wish that we had seen a little bit more of what was going on in Jackie and Evan's house at the time.
Yeah. Don't you sort of, like, your son, I don't know. It is terrible that this allegation came out, but isn't that the risk you take doing a show like this? That, like, the most crazy things might come out about you, you know?
Well, right. That's so interesting you bring it up, because, you know, what I'm immediately thinking of is Meghan Markle and this whole thing with the royal family and the stuff that was happening on Twitter, where it was like, well, didn't you kind of know what you signed up for? And it's like, I guess, yes, in theory, you can understand the risk that you might be taking by putting yourself and your family on a reality show. But until it happens to you, I don't think you really grasp
right.
how much it can affect and how much it does affect, the ripple effect that it has. And then Evan at work and, you know, her kids going to school, and all of a sudden it just becomes this huge thing where you're like, damn, now all the focus is on me. Like, it hasn't been this way yet. And going through that experience must just be like
right.
so difficult. But it is, you know, the nature of the beast. And if Jackie's been watching the show for as long as Jackie yeah. has been watching the show, she should definitely know that this sort of came with the deal. That was in the fine print of that contract you signed.
Exactly. All right, Married to Medicine.
Yeah.
What I love about this season thus far is I feel like we're really putting a face to the first responders, who we've heard about so much during the pandemic, but also why it has been such a struggle for them, you know, because I feel like you see all these memes and stuff on social media, and it's like, think of the first responders, like, don't do this for you, do it for them. And it's like, that's all well and good, but until you really can put some humanity behind it, and like that's what helps you to understand what they're going through.
Right, right. And I think what you just said, when you apply it to so many situations, is really profound. You do have to be exposed to something in a lot of ways to start to understand somebody else's experience or how it all works and what other people are going through. And, you know, for a lot of us, I think during the pandemic, we did have, you know, Facebook friends or people here and there. A lot of people do. Our healthcare workers are related to healthcare workers, but a lot of people are not. So not having that firsthand exposure to it and really knowing what people are going through, it makes it a little bit harder to wrap your head around the severity of the issue. And I think that was the problem
right.
in the beginning for a really long time. But, you know, I started to learn a lot from a handful of people, you know, friends, sisters that, you know, work in healthcare over those first couple of months. Like, I was paying attention to what they were sharing on Facebook to try to really understand what was going on. And I think you're right. This was a really great way to see how much these people were working to stay safe and keep people healthy and protect their families. You know, it's a very real experience.
Yeah.
I was excited when this season started also, mostly to see where Contessa and Scott are in their relationship, because obviously, with the super tease, whether it's really them or not, there is this cheating conversation happening. It appears to be between the two of them. But last season, the two of them were in a pretty rough place. And as much as we have all of this tension between Jackie and Simone and the women on the show, that couple in particular, I was excited to see, like, how are they doing? Are things better? Is Contessa back home? Like, what's the deal now? And it seems like, at least from this episode, things are pretty good between the two of them. Will that last? Doesn't look like it.
I'm very curious to see that, because yeah, it was almost like it was too much of a 180, you know, like they were bad, now they're good. So I feel like it doesn't really work like that. You know, it's more
yeah.
nuanced.
Too good to be true, right? If it looks that way, probably is. Can we also talk for 1 minute about Toya's house and how incredible it is?
It's a great house.
Oh my God. I mean, I remember we got a closet tour of hers on BravoTV.com, I think end of last season. And she has a two-story closet. I mean, it is just out of this world, and just, I think, everybody's dream. Even if you're like, I'm not a materialistic person, a two-story closet, yeah. Imagine the things you could do with that.
Also, when she was telling her sons, oh, you want a house like that? You should, you know, get into medicine. He's like, you're not a doctor. It's like, yeah, why not encourage him to marry someone who's a doctor?
Right.
That is, you know, just as valuable.
Yeah, teach him to value education, even if it's not one that he wants to get. But just, you know, she can network, help him network in the right places to find someone in the medical field.
Oh my God. Simone's son is my favorite person.
Oh, yeah.
I love him so much. When he's just like, well, I'm not going to wear condoms. Like, he's just so funny.
So what about all the freedom?
Oh, you know how I'm going to get down.
How you going to be getting down?
Well, the ladies, come on now.
Now, who's going to buy all your condoms?
I don't use those.
What? You joking, right?
Yeah.
Right, right. And it is so interesting to think, you know, I went to a very liberal college. It was a very liberal city in the middle of a not so liberal area in kind of upstate Western New York. So I almost did the opposite of what he's going through. He's going from a very liberal, forward-thinking, you know, Black community in Atlanta to a more rural, smaller, conservative college, which I can only imagine how concerned he must be and how concerned his parents must be about that, because you just don't think about that. You think of going to college and it's such an experience where you learn and you grow and you meet new people. You think of college as a very progressive, you know, forward motion experience. But I guess depending on where it is, that comes with its own set of risks.
No, my college experience was a reverse cultural awakening, because I grew up in a Dallas suburb. Dallas is very diverse. And I went to a school in a small East Texas town. And I cannot imagine what it must have been like for a person of color going through that experience. Because it was eye-opening to me in so many ways. So to have to deal with that and know that you're possibly on the receiving end of a lot of nasty looks and comments and God knows what else, you know, is terrifying.
I know. It's really scary. But he got that scholarship. He's going to play basketball. All the best of luck, and keep that sense of humor and wear condoms. That's all my advice for him.
And wear condoms. I want to talk about Jackie and Simone.
Okay.
Because I am very disappointed in the state of their friendship right now.
I know.
And do you think that it's inevitable that a friendship will crumble if it's on a reality show too long? Because, you know, and I'm not thinking of like a Tamara or Vicky or a Lisa and Kyle, because those friendships were up and down for always, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But like some examples that came to mind were like Bethany and Carol. You know, they were such good friends, you know, like outside of the show, took vacations together all the time. You know, Brandy and Lisa on Beverly Hills, they were like,
right,
very good friends for a while. And I just wonder if it's just inevitable that it's too much either pressure, or it's like you get the fame involved, and plus you get the outside drama, which is what happened, I think, to Jackie and Simone. It's sort of like other people's drama sort of seeps into the friendship.
Yeah, I think it's either going to build your friendship up and you're going to remain strong because few other people understand the experience of being on a reality show and what the cast dynamics are like. So that can bring people really close together. But I think that same closeness, depending on how it plays out, can turn things around. And the issue is basically between, you know, Heavenly, Simone, and Jackie, and Jackie feeling like she was in the middle of Simone and Heavenly and not really wanting to be a part of that anymore. So it was almost like the relationship with Heavenly was what caused that closeness, was what caused the disconnect between her and Simone. And I think the reality show does probably have more to do with it than they really will talk about on camera.
Yeah.
But I hate to see that. And the worst part is seeing them see each other again for the first time. And you see Jackie trying to, you know, be cool about it, but it's awkward. And Simone doesn't really know what to say. And Jackie tries to hug her, and it's a pandemic. And it's just so socially awkward, just based on the fact that, you know, they're trying to stay safe from the pandemic and everything. It just makes me really sad because, you know, we've all had falling outs with friends in the past and for a number of different reasons or whatever. And then when you try to build that back up, it is rocky and it is awkward and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because you don't really know where to begin. Like, where do you pick up from? If they were kikiing at the reunion, everyone was having a good time, rolling around on the dressing room floor, whatever. But then it's been months and months and months since you've really seen that person. You know, it's not going to just be all hunky-dory and like, you know, another kiki moment when you first see each other. But I just felt really bad for both of them when they first saw each other. It really did feel uncomfortable.
That said, oh my God, thank God for drunk Toya at Heavenly's party for her husband. Because, you know, like you were saying, the rolling around on the dressing room floor, it's just so funny that Toya's like, that was so fake. You didn't mean it. Like, you were just going with the flow. But, like, clearly, if you had meant it, you wouldn't be in this position.
And y'all rolled on the floor. Shut up.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate Toya and how she just will say what's on her mind, especially if she's...
All while sucking on crab legs, right? Mind you.
Which looked so good, and I was getting so hungry watching that scene, because she really was, like, devouring that in a very like, drunk way, but just made me hungry.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was necessarily fake what the women were going through, because circumstances have made it difficult for these women to stay connected, you know, through the pandemic and all of that. So I don't know if it was necessarily fake, but it seems like nobody was really willing to take the next steps. And that's on Simone and Jackie and even Heavenly.
Yeah.
If they weren't willing to keep that communication up and check in with each other and just text and say, how are you doing? Let's, you know, have a Zoom chat, or let's FaceTime next week. You know, you do have to work towards a friendship, but sometimes if you feel like the other person isn't going to put in the work, you're like, well, I'm not going to bother either.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of falls away. And that's the saddest part, is when nobody really wants to put in the work to maintain a friendship that was strong and was valuable to you. Okay, so new cast member Anila has not really had a chance to shine yet, but yeah. Do we have first impressions?
Pretty.
Pretty.
You know, feisty. I don't know.
It seems like she is going to bring a flair
right.
to the show.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that she is married to medicine and she's not the doctor. Because I think from what we've seen in the Super Tease, she's like a blogger and everyone's like, well, is that a real job? And she's like, well, anybody could be a dentist. So there's definitely going to be some of those power dynamics in some ways of like, well, you don't have a real job, which we kind of see on Summer House too, with, you know, Hannah and Paige being like influencers and podcasters. And then Kyle is like, I'm running a business right now. And they don't totally, Kyle doesn't totally take what they do as seriously as what he does, you know? So it's just kind of interesting when you see that. It's kind of like Marge and Jennifer too. It's sort of like, what do you really do? Yeah. Rose and Thorn?
Yes.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, what was your rose?
Okay, my rose is from Real Housewives of Dallas, because Deandra Shaman, who we've seen a bunch in these episodes, turns out is the guy who used to do Stephanie's extensions.
he's multi-talented.
It's not that you can't be both, but it sort of takes away for me a little bit this idea of someone who's been training their whole life to be a shaman. She does clarify that even when he was doing her hair, he used to talk about his time in Peru and, you know, all of these sort of spiritual things. So I guess he's always had it in him, but very funny.
Well, my guess is he's no longer the one who does her extensions because of all of the stuff he was
right.
saying about, you know, Peru and spirituality. She was probably like, oh my God, I can't, like, go to him anymore.
I can't with this.
I can't.
What's your rose?
My rose is Lexi bringing everyone breakfast on Real Housewives of New Jersey, because that is the friend that you need around and you need on a girl's trip. Like, someone who is going to get up early and be like, everyone's going to be a little hungover, let me go get bagels. Like, that is absolute gold. And we love you, Lexi. What was your thorn?
Okay, so my thorn was from Below Deck Sailing Yacht. It was a great episode in terms of everyone just being drunken, horny buffoons.
Mm-hmm.
But during the hot tub party, Chef Natasha reveals that she hasn't had sex in 5 years and has never used a vibrator in her life.
I've never used a vibrator in my life.
Wait.
Let me tell you something. I haven't had sex in 5 years.
What?
In 5 years.
Woman. This generation of men is not the intelligence that I'm attracted to.
I am celibate, okay?
That pains me to hear, because life is short, have the orgasm, you know?
Right. It doesn't, you don't have to have sex, but just, like, for God's sake, what what's been going on for the last 5 years? Like, what have you been doing with your time?
Exactly. What do you even do on a rainy Sunday alone, huh? Like, what do you do?
What do you do in the morning? What do you do like midway through the day? Like, what about at night? I don't understand. Chef Natasha, we need to hook her up with one of those Joe Giudice vibrators.
Absolutely. And speaking of Below Deck Sailing Yacht, we are going to have a special episode with Bravo exec Matt Reichman. And he works on Below Deck Sailing Yacht and spills all the tea. What was your...
Well, my thorn is kind of more related to last week's episode of Real Housewives of Dallas, but it's this whole situation between Brandy and Dr. Tiffany and how Brandy's been positioning herself as the victim in the situation to a degree in which it's a little bit ridiculous, and she's kind of missing the point of the whole thing. Like, she keeps bringing up what she did, which was wrong. And it's not really Tiffany's job to make her feel comfortable. Like, Brandy needs to find that in herself. And they've already had this conversation earlier on in the season about, you know, why it was wrong. And Tiffany seems to have been very understanding and accepting and willing to move forward with Brandy. But Brandy hasn't really put in the same effort and just seems to have different expectations of the whole thing. So it's just, I don't know, it's not sitting well with me. And I love Dr. Tiffany. So I feel like I'm going to just defend her until the end of time.
Totally. And I think it sucks for her because, like, from the jump, she had to be the face of this thing that Brandy did. And then
right.
Continually Brandy's like, I feel bad because you're around. And Tiffany's like, right. Can't change that I'm Asian. Okay. Sure can't. So yeah. Like, my face is my face and you're going to have to it. So sorry about that.
Right. Right. Let's just move forward. Brandy. We'll be back with an all new episode next week, and it's going to be featuring a very special guest co-host. Stay tuned.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the